Hello and welcome to Firestarters, the UK's first social enterprise in health podcast. This week we're doing the first of a five-part series on a workshop on creating a social enterprise. This was recorded live at the workshop, and the next five podcasts will basically build to become a virtual workshop experience. We hope you enjoy it and would love to hear your feedback and suggestions for future podcasts. What I was going to say was, let's sort of start off a bit with social enterprises and kind of what they are. And one of the big problems is, particularly for people in the NHS, is for a lot of people, I'd never heard the word till 3 years ago, and I'd actually been running one for 2 years. And there is actually a surprising number of people out there running social enterprises that had never thought of themselves in that way. But one of the big problems was Patricia Hewitt arrived as the health secretary and started evangelising about it, which in the one sense would have been nice, except she's the most hated health secretary since Virginia Bottomley, which takes some doing. So it's kind of like if Hitler had gone out about vegetarianism. People go, vegetarian's awful, that is just crap. And you go, there's nothing wrong with vegetarianism, it's just Hitler. So social enterprise is a bit like that. It's actually a great model. It's been around for a long time. And in fact, the roots of it go back arguably to Britain in the 1700s, the early kind of co-ops and the mills where mill owners started saying, rather than just exploit people and pay them a pittance, wouldn't it be quite a good idea if we invested some of the profits in schools and housing for workers, gave them a share of the profits and sent the ownership? So the idea has kind of been around for a long time, but it's definitely being sexied up, and that causes a lot of problems, and we'll talk about some of those later. Particularly when organisations go, we must be a social enterprise because it's a sexy thing and because politicians are doing it, and it's a really bad reason to be a social enterprise. I think if I've done nothing else, I think in the last couple of years I must have convinced about 15 PCTs not to turn into social enterprises because they just had no idea what it was. And we'll talk a bit about that. So kind of what is it? Well, there's loads of book definitions. The one that kind of makes sense to me is really to kind of work out what it's not. And broadly speaking, there's three sectors. There's the public sector, and the public sector is funded by and run by government. So whether that's education or the police or the NHS, but basically taxes go into it, taxes get spent on it, and it's run by people who are largely accountable to politicians. So, and it's kind of easy to spot when you see it. Private sector is, you know, businesses out there, Boots and, you know, Virgin and Microsoft and all the rest of it. Companies which essentially exist to maximise profit. And legally speaking, certainly those with shareholders actually have a legal duty to maximise profit to give to their shareholders. And then you loosely have this thing called the third sector, and often it's defined by not being either of those. So if it's not funded by and run by government, it's not in the public sector. And some people say, well, yeah, but if the NHS pays for it. And I go, well, yeah, the NHS pays for stamps, but it doesn't mean the post office is part of the NHS. The NHS pays for office furniture, but it doesn't mean Staples is part of the NHS. So if it's not controlled by government, it's not in the public sector. And if it's not primarily about maximising profit for individuals, it's not in the private sector. And there's kind of a bit of a kind of grey area, because, and some of you are talking about your experiences, an awful lot of people who work in the private sector don't make very much money. And there is kind of a bit of a grey area. And there are some people that say, well, actually, I run a business, but my business is about helping people. So it can get a bit grey. But essentially, the third sector is about saying, it's not about making profit for individuals, and it's not being run by the government. And I don't know if you've heard the phrase, the third sector, but it kind of gets a bit misleading, because actually what it lumps together is sort of three groups of people. Voluntary groups, where essentially you have a couple of staff, but most of the work is delivered by people who aren't being paid. Registered charities, they're easy to spot, because if you're a registered charity, you have a number. If you haven't got a number, you're not a registered charity, because you're part of the Charities Commission. And then social enterprises. So at one level, social enterprises is really kind of anything that trades and makes profit, but what it wants to do with the profit is something different to what the private sector do. Now, I don't know if that makes sense. I mean, that's kind of a woolly way. Now, what you'll hear is all sorts of textbook definitions, and some of those textbook definitions are patently wrong. Some of them are kind of okay. There isn't a really nice, snappy, you know, byline of a social enterprise is dot, dot, dot. But something that makes profit for a social cause isn't a bad one. It's often the one I go back to. Because that differentiates it from charities and voluntary groups, which don't make profits. And the model behind charities and voluntary groups is, by and large, what we do, we don't get enough money for, so we need to raise money for it. So what is kind of interesting, and why it's a bit hybrid, and one of the reasons it's a bit hard to get your head about, I'll just finish this bit and I'll settle down and we'll come, is that in some ways, social enterprise has a bit in common with this lot. Because by and large, this lot are all about making the world a better place, providing services for people, changing the world. Most of this lot is all fairly ethical. The way they do it is very different, though. And in other ways, these two are the only ones that make profit, because this lot don't. So it's kind of a weird hybrid of both worlds. And some of the stuff that's useful to learn, there's not that much about how to run a successful social enterprise. There are literally only a handful of books. There's some new ones coming out, some which are okay. So a lot of what you will learn is useful stuff from here that you can apply here, and some useful stuff that you can apply there.
Can I ask a daft question?
No, there is no such thing as a daft question. Only daft people.
Okay, I've been warming myself out to be a daft person. No. If you consider two companies, you've got Virgin Healthcare, the profit-making organisation, and you've got Virgin Healthcare labelling themselves as the social enterprise.
Yeah.
Could they look exactly the same through the front door and structure, where the social enterprise would plough the profits back into the organisation, whereas the private company would be ploughing their profits into dividends to their shareholders?
Yeah, Virgin Social Enterprise is a load of bollocks.
No, I'm not saying it exists.
No, but actually there are hybrids like that. There are people pretending to be a social enterprise.
So are you saying that they're faking it to make him profit, or you couldn't run that sort of service as a social enterprise?
They're faking it to make money. I don't believe there is anything you couldn't run as a social enterprise. And actually, I have a number of... Sorry. If it's my cough, you're going to get it in about half an hour, and you might just, you know... Okay, in which case it's going that way around. Now's a good time to run. That's an interesting one. And until social enterprise became sexy about 2 years ago, who in their right mind would want to pretend to be a social enterprise? Because actually, it is harder running that than any of these. Because these people get lots of money and all the rest of it. These people are recognised. These people are, people go, what is it? But then when you go to the banks, they go, well, you're not private sector, so you tended to get the worst of all worlds. The problem is when people like the Social Enterprise Investment Unit suddenly said there's millions of quid in being a social enterprise, an awful lot of people said, let's be one of them to get some cash. And I've had people approach me saying, well, I want to look like a social enterprise. Hence, and I don't know if it exists yet, but I won't be surprised, you know, the Virgin Social Enterprise, oh, we're a social enterprise, so you can give us a contract and a load of money.
But is having a label of a social enterprise more attractive to commissioners than having a label of being a private
enterprise? Yes, and that's one of the problems, and it shouldn't be. But actually, it's a very easy way to tell, because people go, how do you tell? And I go, about 30 seconds looking at their annual accounts, where does the money go? And you can spot a mile off, because a profit-maximising company pays big dividends to directors, pays big dividends to shareholders, is maximising profit, and you can tell. And so not only the way, it's kind of, you can't really fake it that well. It's very easy to tell when you're talking to someone. You can kind of do it. If you're ever at a bar on a conference, what you'll find is there's a mixture of social enterprise people, bankers, investors, you'll spot them. They just look at the world a bit differently, they talk a bit differently, they get passionate about different things. There is a kind of qualitative difference. But at the moment there is, and one of the things I believe is there shouldn't be any advantage in being a social enterprise. There shouldn't be the disadvantages, but, you know. But there are people pretending to be social enterprises. And to me it's like, look, if you want to make the world a better place, if Virgin says we want to pretend to be a social enterprise and we're going to make the world a bit of a better place, yeah, okay, fair enough, but... You know, but they're not really social enterprises. And there are a few like that who they claim to be, but then when you scrape under the skin, you go, well, actually, there's some very highly paid people here, and there's quite a lot of money going here, and what's that doing? And, you know, does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
So, but it's not that clear cut. And one of the problems is sometimes is that this is a bit mergy. And sometimes people go, well, what is it? And so, in some ways, the label stops being helpful. And the issue really, from a commission point of view, is what can you do and how can you help this group and are you good at what you do? And sometimes the private sector will beat, so, you know, will beat other people just because they're better at it. You know, I'm not dead anti-private sector. It's more...
Can I ask the question?
Of course you can. Everyone can ask.
I'm having thoughts around it. GPs were...
Yeah.
...been asked to set up a social engine.
Yeah.
To run polyclinics.
Oh, yeah.
But they're, to me, private sector.
Yeah.
But they're being paid by the public.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's an example of... I can't sort of think around that.
GPs are the private sector. People
social enterprise.
People don't understand. I mean, until I worked in primary care, I thought GPs were part of the NHS. GPs aren't part of the NHS at all. What I say to people, I mean, I'm a bearer of simple brain. So to me, I go, what's the private sector? The private sector is when you make a lot of money, that money ends up in your back pocket, and you drive a nice car, build a big house, and drive a yacht, and have a nice foreign holiday. Mm-hmm. That's the private sector. That's what Richard Branson does. That's what, you know. Well, that's what GPs do. GPs take money out of profits and pocket it and put it in buying their own car. Mm. And so I've heard people saying, turning GP practices into social enterprise, privatising the NHS, and I've gone, well, actually, that is already private. If you change what happens with the money, you may make it into a social enterprise. But there are people who, and I might be getting ahead of myself, there are GP cooperatives. There's a lot of people that say a cooperative is a social enterprise. So you know the co-op bank, co-op shop, and the rest of it. What those started off as was people in a community getting together, clubbing together to get access to cheap food and a bit of dividend to reinvest in the local community. Dead mega social. GP practices are, let's share the profit amongst ourselves, but everyone who's getting the profit's already earning like 100 grand. People earning over 100 grand sharing profits amongst themselves, to me, isn't really a social enterprise. But a lot of people go, well, it is because it's a co-op. And we can sort of diverge into a whole thing there. But to me, it's like, what are you trying to... is there really some social good? Is there... what's the heart of what you're trying to do? The heart of most social enterprises, we're trying to change the world. Money is just simply the way we do it. But what we really want to do is make this bit of the world a better place. That's what drives us. We need the money. Because if we don't get the money, it will fold. But that's what drives us. What drives private sector is the money. And that's often where, you know, why is Virgin interested in healthcare? Because it thinks it can make money. If there wasn't money in it, would Virgin be interested in it? No, they wouldn't. But, you know, people like The Big Life or, you know, would be interested because they're not particularly into the money. Sorry, John.
I was just going to say, I mean, kind of politically...
It's all right.
Politically.
You can always wave your hand and go, I don't want this bit recorded, but, you know.
Politically, from the kind of inception of the NHS, GPs have been a problem, haven't they?
Yeah.
It's kind of like partition of countries. It was kind of, they sold out to private enterprise as a way of engaging GPs. And if a social enterprise is run properly, it's a way of kind of solving that problem of GPs not being waged in a way, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there are genuine social enterprise GP things, and sometimes in inner cities, you get GPs whose passion is about the health of the community, don't particularly pay themselves very well, put a lot of the money into local communities. So I'm not necessarily knocking all GPs, but GPs as a general tribe are much more interested in maximising profit for themselves than, you don't even get medical consultants generally don't do that kind of thing, and you know, but... what I'd say is it's woolier than anyone. If someone says to you, this is a social enterprise, it's nice, clear cut, that's how you spot it. They don't really get it.
Okay, and this is a very specific question.
Okay.
Say for, in my case, is that, and I'm not naive about it, is that the interest in setting up a social enterprise is to shift care and potentially access more patients who require treatment, who are not accessing treatment at the moment because it is under-resourced.
Okay.
That's likely to be compromised by private sector. Does it... but would be under the guise of any profits by the social enterprise, if we can call it that, back in to either expanding it.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the long-term gain is that more therapeutic intervention, of which the private sector will make a profit, because you'll be using more ampules or more drugs or more syringes. Does it still make it a social enterprise?
I think that bit could be. And I think to me, I move away a bit from necessarily the money and the structure and go, what are you trying to do? And that's often the acid test. Because the way I look at it is often the area of the biggest need has the least money. If you want to make money, you go in the stock market, you go here, you go here, you cherry pick. You're interested in money, you'll be attracted to certain areas. If you're interested in social change and social good, you're often attracted into a different area. And sometimes you have to make deals to make the thing work. And I'm not anti-deals in the private sector, and we'll talk a bit about where funding and stuff like that. You sometimes have to get into bed with the devil a bit. But it's being clear. And you know, the private sector isn't evil. There are bits of the private sector which are evil. You know, arms manufacturers is an evil thing. They make a lot of money by spreading death and destruction. Fair cop. You know, the cigarette industry is evil. But actually, I don't know, Boots, as an example, is making some money, but is helping an awful lot. So there are kind of grey areas. But I would always go back to kind of, what is this really about? And it's the decisions you make. Because one of the things that you'll spot between these two is, if I said to you, here's an opportunity that's going to make an awful lot of money, but the kind of people you're probably going to help are kind of middle class, wealthy kind of people. Or there's an opportunity over here where you can make some real difference with some really disadvantaged communities, and you might just about break even if you're lucky. You'll spot who's interested in what. Because the private sector will not go near that with a 10-foot barge pole, unless there's something in it for them. Whereas often that's what the private sector go. That's what the social enterprise goes. Social enterprise would go, well, why do we particularly want to do that? That doesn't really, you know, that's not really affecting social change. But other people might go, well, there's cash in it. So, hence, I don't think there are any social, I can't think of any social enterprise nursing homes. Actually, nursing homes might be a bad example.
Charitable ones.
Yeah, there are charitable ones, and charities will sometimes go into spaces, and hospices are. But there's areas where the private sector will go into, because what they're interested in is profit and making money. So in terms of the public good bit, I mean, interestingly, and one of the questions I often ask people is, why you want to be a social enterprise as opposed to a registered charity, as opposed to doing it in the public sector, as opposed to doing it through a voluntary group? And sometimes that's not been very well thought through. And particularly when Patricia Hewitt was actively pushing social enterprises, I was coming across quite a lot of people who said, oh, I want to be a social enterprise, when actually, when you unpicked what their model was, said actually you would have life easier as a charity, and we'll come on to structural stuff later on. But it's kind of, in a sense, all of these four can be agents for social good, but social enterprise does it in a different way than the others, because social enterprise is about trading. And what tends to happen is the way public sector gets funded and supported is you have to lobby government, and it depends on which government, whether local or national is in power, and you know, you get all the politics of that, that's inherently political. Voluntary groups and charities often get money by going, we're really poor, and we work with really poor people, and we're really poor, and please give us some money. And social enterprises just go, look, we're going to make money by trading. We don't need to portray ourselves as poor or disadvantaged. And also, we don't want to work in these kind of ways. So you sometimes see people going, actually, I'm sick to death of having a management team of 18 people deciding every time I want to order a stapler, which you do get in this kind of area. I want to operate in a more business-like way. I want to operate more like an entrepreneur, but what I want to do is change the world, not make a lot of money. Does that kind of make sense to people? And this is kind of an interesting space. This graph kind of says, okay, on the left we've got what social good are you doing? So high social good, average or no social good, and are you going to lose money, break even, or make a profit? Now, in a sense, the public sector is here. The public sector is about making high social good and inherently loses money. You know, it gets funded by a taxpayer because it just sucks money. Money goes into it, you know, that's what it does. So you've got kind of the public sector tends to operate around here, and charities tend to operate in this sort of space. So charities tend to be break even, quite a lot lose money, but they're about social good. Where social enterprise operates tends to be here. So one of the key questions when I'm trying to work out whether you should be a social enterprise or a charity is, does your business model have a profitable end? We're not just all of these three are interested in high social good. Can you make money doing it? And so, for instance, someone approached me and said they want to set up a social enterprise and they wanted to do stuff for disadvantaged kids in the street. And I went, yeah, great. Where are you going to get your income from? People are going to give us grants and we're going to fundraise. And I said, that's really cool. That's a charity. And he said, no, I want to be a social enterprise. I said, but what you just described is the business model of a charity. You will struggle as a social enterprise because actually there is no profit making. But if someone said, right, we're going to run a recycle business where we take old bits of wood that people throw away, we recycle them, we turn them into furniture, we sell it, we make a market, we employ people that otherwise wouldn't get a job, we're doing stuff about green, we're trading, we're making money, but we're actually doing it because we're interested in the environment and getting people who are unemployed back into work. You go, yeah, that's social good and there's profit in it. So that's often the thing where I'm teasing out is what's the financial model underneath it? And if your financial model is you're basically going to run at a loss and you want government funding, that's probably the way to go. You know, if you want to fundraise and just about break even, that's probably a charity. If there's genuine profit in there, you're a social enterprise. Yeah?
Do you have to have worked out what you want to do with the profit at setting up time?
I don't think so. You don't usually make profit setting up time. Yeah, it took us 2 years to turn our first profit, and then you're in the position of, and often what happens is the first bits of profit you make often end up funding the money that got you
into,
because often you need to raise money to start with, then when you make profit you repay that back, and it's the same in the private sector. There's then a point where you've repaid back your initial and then you are starting to sit on big pots. And that's often the way you tell people apart. It's like, what have you done with your pot of money? Have you just gone, hey, let's all quadruple our salaries and, you know, let's pay dividends and shareholders? Or have you gone, hey, we can now afford those workers and those projects that we couldn't do before? And I was going to say, the private sector tends to operate here. Now, some of the private sector does do social good, and some of the corporate social responsibility stuff can end up there. But what the private sector is interested in is spaces where there is profit. So interestingly, where you're starting to get some competition, and if we take Virgin as an example, of where the private sector and social enterprise start to compete with each other, is there is profit in here, and so the private sector is saying, if there's profit, we're attracted to profit, like moths to a flame. You know, you sometimes get startup, well, there's no real point to be there, really. I mean, why would you do evil and lose money? They don't tend to be, you know, there probably is some model up there. Probably if you're psychotic, there's probably a bit of space around here, you know. I'll just go around and stab a random person every week, but there's no real money in it. So does that kind of help people think, when people look at that, do they start thinking, where is my project on there?
Or where's my... just really confusing for me, because as you know, I've got the charity running.
Yeah.
And the business running.
Yeah.
And my idea is to try and turn the charity and the business into one and make it a social enterprise.
And actually, there is more interest in that, because what I'm finding is there are some charities and their interest in social enterprise is as a way of increasing their income. What they're saying is we're struggling, particularly with things like the lottery fund, we're not getting the fundraising we were, we're not getting the public sector contracts. We are now starting to be pushed that way because we're losing money. If you lose money year on year on year, you fail. So they're seeing social enterprises as a way of supplementing. And there's nothing wrong with it. And it goes back to that why you... I mean, Oxfam shops is a really interesting example. You know, if you look at some of the shops, it's like, here's tatty old stuff and we'll just flog it and we'll have some little old retired person who'll say, you can have that for 30p. Oxfam have kind of moved up a notch, and those Christmas cards where you buy a well or a donkey, it's got quite slick, it's making actually quite a chunk of money, but that's about supporting Oxfam. They say, you know, we can make money selling wells and donkeys, and I get to see the look on my mum's face when I buy her a toilet for a Christmas present, which is just fantastic. It's like, oh, thanks. Like, yeah, it's a toilet. Right.
Well, design
a
way as well.
Yeah, we are. And it goes. Yeah.
There has been complaints, though, from third sector magazines saying that they're not going to private sector. They're not. Because as a charity, you like Rage Concert shops and Oxfam and everything, under the trade now, they can only sell second-hand goods. Because otherwise, they're going into the normal, you know, selling next clothes and stuff like that. They're coming, they're trading off. And there's big arguments at the moment at the Charities Commission and
absolutely.
The sector saying be careful because you're not actually doing it. You're not selling second-hand goods is one thing.
Selling proper goods.
New
yeah, yeah.
goods is another. Because you're actually going into a normal profit.
And actually, I'm really glad you said that because that's one of the problems with social enterprise with charities trading. I mean, I've been on the board of a couple of national charities and the charity commission says, look, you can't just set up Oxfam Megastore,
yeah.
flog CDs and DVDs. We're not going to let
yeah,
you do
that.
So there are issues about if you've got a profitable arm, you may or may not be able to do it under the umbrella of a charity. What you may do is create social enterprise as a trading arm that links with a charity. And we'll come back to
that.
Yeah.
But the council's doing a trading arm, social enterprise,
yeah, yeah.
mental health inclusion unit.
Yeah.
I just thought that would be unfair competition to the private sector, trading that way. Charities
yeah.
trading that way it would be unfair to the private sector.
It is. It is possible. And there is a bit of me that goes, woo, boo, hoo.
Yeah.
Boo, boo, hoo. I would be very comfortable to see the private sector vanish in the next 50 years. And in fact, I'm reading some interesting books that says it may actually be a completely flawed model, but that's a pub discussion. But what is interesting is that there are complaints of the private sector when social enterprises are attending to them saying, but they don't have to pay money to shareholders and directors, and we do, and that means they're competing on unfair footing. And a lot of NHS commissioners are going, yeah,
but so
deal with it.
The opposite direction.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, as a private company, that's not about fairness or equity, is it?
Yeah.
It's paying to
absolutely.
A privileged
they,
few, so.
They can operate with lower running costs than you.
Get over it,
yeah.
Yeah,
those, the running costs you're now talking about is your greed. Deal with your greed or compete. And it's interesting. Yeah, and you will start getting some turf wars. If people talk about social enterprises, if it's no, there's some turf wars developing between charities and social enterprises. Go, hang on, what you're doing is unfair. What we're doing, other people are grumbling. People aren't happy when they start taking their turf. And at one level, you sometimes are going to be in competition with the social enterprises and charities and the public sector. You know, the public sector doesn't like some of the social enterprises going, well, you're delivering this service better than we are, and that's not fair. And it goes, well, then. Deliver your service better. Well, we can't. Well, tough. Yeah, I have no problem with social enterprise not for profit knocking bits of the NHS out by saying we do this better than you do, and we do it within the community engagement way and the rest of it. You know, the hospice movement's a really interesting example. You know, a lot of people don't realise it's only about 40 years old, and the hospice movement grew out of people going. And, you know, we're going to get nursey for a second. I apologise now. But once you've seen a couple of hospital deaths, you go, my God, I just hope I never die in a hospital. It is just the worst way you could ever go. And people went, that's rubbish. Let's create an alternative. And in the early days, the NHS was like, what are you doing? It has taken money out of NHS services. But to me, it's like, well, yeah, it should. The NHS should either become a better place to die or just go, actually, hospices are the better place to die. You know.
Well, hospices are often run as charities, though, aren't they?
Most of them are, yeah, because actually they only get a little bit of NHS funding, and most of them operate in this area, to be honest.
And would there be an option for primary care to commission hospice services for them to generate funding that way rather than be a charitable fund?
You could. The problem with a hospice is where's your business model? Where's your profitability? Now, you could do Soylent Green Hospice. And actually, when they die, we're going to put them in a tin and sell them. And, you know, there might be some business models. But I haven't yet seen a business model that people would go, there is profit in death. Now, there may be. And actually, there are private sector funeral homes. And there may be people that says, do you know what? We could actually operate a really ethical thing. And we've somehow got a business model that generates profit. But there are some areas where I can't see a profit, you know. And other people can't find a business model. So you're kind of stuck in this area that says, what we do is really great, we don't get enough money, so please fundraise and do fund runs for us and donate in the wills and the NHS gives. And at the moment, that kind of works.
Okay.
You know.
I'm very ignorant about this.
Okay.
Could you not commission that service like you commission palliative care from a secondary care service? And that so that the funding would actually come from... primary care, and they would on a sort of break-even scale, or is it just that
you
could longer in the service than you anticipate?
You could, and hold that thought, because when we come onto finance, there is an issue that when people say I have a social enterprise profit model, and all the money comes from the public sector, I go, I think you might be in for a shock there. Because I don't think the NHS public sector will ever support long-term a profitable business model. So, for instance, when I was a commissioner, I commissioned basically all of the health-funded voluntary and charity organisations in the whole of Manchester, right, from big ones and little ones. First thing I used to do was look at their annual accounts. One or two of them, I said, you made £250,000 surplus last year, you made £250,000 surplus the year before, I'm giving you less money. And they were like, well, you have to give us this money. I went, you don't need it. You are sat on a lot of cash. You are basically charging much more. Within what I'm giving you is a chunk of profit, and you know what? I can do something better with it. And I think a smart, if you were running
but
and you were making £1 million
a year. Social enterprise says, yeah, you can charge me less for it.
Yeah,
it's
but then you make that.
Yeah. Doing something with it.
Yeah, and there might be a debate about that. And if they were really good, they might have argued the toss and said, but look at what we're doing with this profit. We're doing this with it. But actually, I started to see some very, very nice cars in the car park, and I started to see some very plush carpet, and I went, I'm not buying this. And actually, they were, to me, under a charitable arm, operating an awful lot like a private sector organisation. But yeah, if you set up, this is what I'm going to do with it. But often, I say the key is maybe have a number of commissioners, and maybe have a number of NHS commissioners, a number of local authority, and also find alternative funding streams. Because, and we'll come back to that. But it's, I think if your business model is, particularly if it's one local one public sector commissioner will give us the money, because they do it with hospitals all the time. You look at how much money they've got, and you look at what they're doing with it, and you use that to influence how much money you give them. You know. Does that... We will deviate a bit. I'll try and keep us back on target if it's...
Do you think that social enterprise might end up, not that they should, but they might end up being a bit like arms-length management organisations because of this kind of sexiness? You know the way housing went from local authority to arms-length, like Manchester Housing and all the others. Do you think that because it's kind of the sexy model, you might end up with these that end up getting repeat business because they used to be yours.
They might.
They're kind of, you know.
They might. At the moment, I mean, a lot of people talk about, and they used to talk about this model of big PCTs putting all their nursing services into a social enterprise. Mm. People talk about it as if lots and lots and lots of people have done it. Precisely one has done it. Lots of people have talked about it, lots of people planning it, but only one's done it. And actually, when we come on to failure rates, there's a lot of reasons why that model probably won't work. But it might do. I mean, the thing is, we don't know. And one of the other shifts, which is just a little diversion, is look at in the supermarket how many fair trade teas and coffees there are now. What you now find is there's probably a shelf. And now you've got people like Nestle, which is an absolute... I mean, there are midwives around who would argue that's Nestle. You know, Nestle in the 90s were giving baby milk to mothers in Africa, and they were giving just enough baby milk to stop them being able to breastfeed, and babies were being given dirty water to mix with powdered milk, which was much worse than breast milk, and thousands of babies died because of Nestle's marketing campaign. And Nestle are now moving into fair trade because they're seeing profit, because fair trade is sort of turning on its head. Classical economics says, why would you buy, and I defy anyone to spot the difference between a fair trade coffee and a normal coffee and a blind taster. It tastes the same. But people are prepared to pay more because it's being ethically sourced and because it's going to farmers and they think they're doing something for the world. So there's something about consumer behaviour is changing.
And a lot of that's marketing, because actually it might be a fair proportion of that profit is going.
Yeah.
It's only that it's better than the non-fair trade stuff.
And that's the interesting bit where I distinguish between people saying, we give 2% of our money to this charity, 2% of the profit to that charity, and you go, whoopee woo. Whereas the social enterprise go, no, we give all of our profit to that. That's what we do. And yeah, there is a bit. And there's arguments in the fair trade community that says there's people that do really good fair trade work that's funding hospitals, communities, it's empowering communities. And suddenly people like Nestle are coming along and they're saying it's not real. You scratch below the surface and actually very little money gets to poor farmers. But people see fair trade and fair trade, so they're trying to kite market. But now I am deviating. So I'm just going to move on a bit. Okay. So do people in their head kind of have a feel of what social enterprises that is? There is almost a journey where actually when you start thinking about this, it does start getting more confusing. Mm-hmm. And actually, it is fuzzy out there. There are not very clear lines, particularly between it, you know. And a lot of people are saying, well, where is the difference?
Commissioners are having problems at the moment as well, especially the councils, because they call me up and ask, how can we change our tenders? And I'm like, can you tell me?
Yeah, and we're going to come on to commissioning and tenders.
How can they do it fairly? If you've got a private organisation and social enterprise, you've got the same questions, do they have to put different questions in to say, how are you using your profit?
Yeah.
And a lot of social enterprises haven't got the accounts. So they're juggling, they don't even know whether they're coming or going at the moment.
And there's whether you can prove it, because it's just because you want to do social good, is there's a difference between wanting to do it and doing it. And there are organisations who say they do, and they don't really. And it's not because they're bad people, it's largely because they're a bit disorganised and they haven't really got their act together. So that was the end of part one of the workshop, and part two will be on next week. This is Dave Dawes from entrepreneurses.net, and the music was Fire Dance by DJ Booley under a Creative Commons license. Again, there's more information on the website at www.entrepreneurses.net, entrepreneurses.net. And hear you next week.